America has been the historically largest emitter of greenhouse gas emissions in the world, and the Midwest has been the leading emitter of greenhouse gas emissions in the United States, and Indiana has been the leading emitter within the Midwest. So Indiana plays a very important and outsized role in the effort to try to tackle climate change. So we're number one in terms of greenhouse gas emissions per capita in the Midwest. And that's driven by the fact that we have been historically so dependent on coal. We have a very large industrial sector and a very large agricultural sector. Industrially, we are the most dependent on industry in America. And agriculture-wise, we are ranked in the top five in terms of these industrial livestock operations. And so the Hoosier Environmental Council's outlook is focused on the top three sources of greenhouse gas emissions in the state: energy, agriculture, and transportation. TC's been around for nearly 35 years, and our approach is very much focused on trying to use public policy as a means to accelerate. We've already seen a significant amount of change in terms of the composition of where we get our electricity from over in the last decade. As power plants began to reach their end life, as federal public policies made companies internalize the costs that they impose on society in terms of air pollution impacts and water pollution impacts, that led to a change in the economics of different fuel resources. We have seen a significant change from coal to natural gas, which has had an impact on reducing Indiana's carbon footprint. And furthermore, we've seen a change in the prices of renewable energy, a pretty precipitous decline in terms of utility-scale wind as well as utility-scale solar, and nearly comparable declines in terms of rooftop solar. And so that has changed the composition of our electricity sector in such a way that we have about half the number of coal plants that we had a decade ago, and renewable energy is around 5% of Indiana's electricity mix.
What's the impact of that anti-solar bill that was passed in the last legislature? Is that going to be a serious impediment to homeowners putting rooftop panels on?
It certainly will be, and not just to homeowners, but really to a whole array of Hoosiers, small businesses, churches, and other congregations, and educational institutions, to name a few, because the bill is pretty wide in scope. And it will be particularly damaging for those people who want to get into installing rooftop solar on their property, so-called customer-owned solar energy. And it will be devastating to it because after 5 years, there's going to be a drastic change in how the electricity grid values the electricity that a solar customer provides the grid. So right now, anytime you put excess power to the grid and you are a customer of one of the investor-owned utilities, Duke Energy or Indianapolis Power and Light or Vectren, any excess power that you put on the grid, you are credited on your electricity bill at the retail rate. And so your meter basically dials backwards to the extent that you're putting excess power on the grid. That not only helps the economics of your project, but it also is providing a fair credit for all the different services that you're providing to the electricity grid. Now, with SB 309, the bill that you're referring to, that idea of net metering will go away for anyone that installs their systems 5 years from now.
Yes, actually, the church I attend, we were very keen on putting rooftop panels on the church. But given SB 309, we've decided that it doesn't make any financial sense at all. So we've basically scrapped the plan. So they've been very successful in killing.
Well, I hope that it's definitely been a discouragement for a lot of people who are interested in solar. But if you install before January 1st of 2018, you will have net metering for the next 30 years. And if you install between January 1st, 2018 and July 1st, 2022, then you will have net metering for 10 years. And then again, if you install after July 1st, 2022, then you will have no net metering. So we do hope that people take advantage of the fact that there is a short window of time between now and January 1st, 2018, where you can have fairly similar public policy as existed prior to the passage of SB 309.
That's good to know. What's happening on the wind turbine front?
Well,
is there new capacity?
The number of wind farms in Indiana continues to increase. Most of them, as you know, or as your audience knows, are off of I-65 north of Lafayette in Benton County, which is to the west of I-65, if you're going north, and White County, which is east of I-65, as, again, you're going north from Indianapolis or from Lafayette. But there are other wind farms that are emerging. There's one on 37 heading south towards Indianapolis from Fort Wayne. And there are several wind farm projects that are being proposed in other parts of the state. And there's also another big wind farm in Randolph County in east central Indiana.
And ultimately, what is the capacity of wind? Could wind turbines satisfy all the power needs, let's say, in the northern part of the state?
Yes, they could. And I think the question is really about making sure that they're sited in the proper place. You know, we as an environmental organization, we care about wind energy because it is carbon free in terms of its air emissions, and it doesn't discharge any water pollution like coal plants do. But we also know that, like any energy technology, it should be subject to good sustainability standards, which means that you want to make sure that a wind farm isn't located in a path that could harm birds in any meaningful way. And what that means is that even if the technical capacity of wind is quite significant, more than 40,000 megawatts in terms of technical potential in Indiana, which is more than enough to satisfy the power in the entire state. But the question is that you want to make sure that it's sited in the right place and that it takes into consideration the views and opinions of the community, so that the community feels that it nicely integrates with their vision for their community. Most certainly, utility-scale wind can occupy a meaningful percentage of Indiana's electricity. You know, you look at Iowa, where about 30% of their electricity comes from wind power, and then places like Minnesota, where they have a requirement that they get 25% of their electricity from renewable energy, and wind is certainly making up the lion's share of that.